Okay. Minutes regarding, is it April 12th? Is that right?
Really?
Am I looking at the wrong?
No, May 24th.
Yeah.
Looking at the wrong agenda here.
Nah, it's just a little error in the agenda.
Okay.
Minutes are correct, the agenda's correct.
Okay.
Second.
No objections? Motion is approved. Public comment on non-agenda items. Anyone, member of the public, wish to comment on non-agenda items? Seeing none. First order of business to review this agenda. Do I hear a motion to reposition item number 6 to the next item on the agenda?
So move to move item 6 to position 4 on our agenda.
Discussion? Objections? Hearing none. That we'll move item transportation element number 6 to our next discussion point. I'll turn it over to you guys.
All right. Okay, so we have basically, I think, everybody here that needs to be here from a staff standpoint. And what we're going to do is first of all, Ron's got a little announcement, so we're going to turn it over to Ron here in a minute. We have been making the edits that were requested of us during our last Planning Commission meeting. So what we have here is a document that we think represents a solid, approvable transportation element. We have had we've had all of the public meetings and what have you. And in between our last meeting, we did have one more public comment come in, and it came in from Sherwood in writing. And we have reviewed what Sherwood has suggested be added, and we don't see any reason why the language couldn't be added. So I will pass that out. I know you haven't seen it. It did come in today. So, but again, staff reviewed it, and we feel it. Here, I'll just pass that.
Can you just summarize?
The main changes are on page 36. There's a request to add. There's a figure that shows. Sorry, go to page 85. There's a figure that shows the pedestrian projects in green, and there's an element on 140th where the green stops. It isn't connected. So what Sherwood is recommending is that pedestrian connection, which is the sidewalk to the school, basically be connected. And we feel that's fine because what it says is pedestrian project, so whether that means an actual sidewalk or we incorporate Wood River and we use the trail, we think that's a great idea. So that one is a yes. He has some language in his email that he sent to the city on page 4 that talks about interstate trucking. And he's highlighted in yellow. We find all of that language to be fine. The only thing we have not had time to confirm is the approximate number of trucks, which he has stated is 6,500 trucks travel over I-90. We haven't had time to confirm that number. So assuming that number is correct, we don't see any problem with that language either. To be added to page 36 under interstate trucking. So with that, I would ask the Planning Commission to, I want to pass it over to Ron, because Ron's kind of got a cool thing he wants to bring up.
Actually, got a couple things to bring up. First is that you might or might not see on our website or in the paper that they're hiring a public works director for the city of North Bend. So I'm retiring at the end of this year. So just wanted to not let you surprise.
You didn't bring cake?
End of the year.
Oh.
Not the end of this meeting, the end of the year.
The fiscal year is 15 days.
Fiscal year. you want to hold another meeting in 2 weeks?
Well, congratulations.
I don't know if it's congratulations or not, but I'm retiring. Whatever.
Can we call you anyway?
You can call me anyway. That's fine.
Doesn't mean Lance.
Call me anything you want. Anyway, it's fine. You know.
So that means your Thursdays are free.
Okay.
Thursdays are free after the first of the year, right? The second thing I want to mention is late last month, we started the process of applying for grant money through Puget Sound Regional Council for federal STP funds, which is basically federal highway for street, you know, transportation type projects. And there is allocation of money that is set aside for rural communities and unincorporated King County. That pool of money is where we basically apply for grants under. That amount of money was $1.9 million. And we applied initially for the design of the roundabout at North Bend Way and Park Street. King County applied for a project, a large street project in their area. They asked for $1.7 million, so basically almost all of it. And actually, we were the only two projects that were applied for against that money. Snoqualmie didn't put in any application for funds, and neither did Carnation. I think those are about, there's only four of us really in that group. So we applied, we met, and as a group, we decided how to divvy up the funds. That's sort of an informal way of doing it. You know, it's an interesting process because you don't go up in front of a formal review board like you would with the main municipalities that have to fight for the money there. You get together as a group of applicants, and then whoever's actually gone through the formal application process, submitting an application, and we all review those applications together. And there's one main person that sort of coordinates all this, and he will rank all the projects as he sees them, and then we talk about it and we discuss, well, is that ranking appropriate or not, or what have you. So in this process, King County got their $1.7 million. We got our $200,000 for the roundabout project, for the design. Then, a week later, got a call from that coordinator saying, oh, King County's project didn't qualify because it was not an arterial, it was a collector street. So it didn't qualify for the grant money. We all need to make application again for the balance of $1.7 million. So it was open up to the field again. So this time I made an application in with the help of Jenna's wording and everything for the funding of the downtown plaza. King County came in with another project of theirs over by Duval, and Snoqualmie came in with a culvert project under Meadowbrook Drive, or I think that's the name, yeah. Snoqualmie screwed up their application because they put it under the wrong category of work. So they didn't get ranked. King County was again applying for $1.7 million, and we applied for $475,000 for the downtown plaza. After negotiations, our project ranked the best, ranked higher than King County's. We were able to negotiate $350,000 of grant money for that, and the county got the balance for their project. So in the last 2 weeks, we got $550,000 on two projects. It starts in January, and we're looking at doing the downtown plaza in 2013, and we're looking at doing design work on the roundabout in 2013 and 14. There'll be another round of applications in 2 years when more SDP money becomes available. That will rank very well in the competition because it will be construction ready, and we should be able to get the balance of what we need, which is probably going to be about 1.2 million or something like that, or 1.1 million. If we don't get all of that, if we get some, and we'll go to Transportation Improvement Board, they will usually match or give the smaller communities the additional money they need to make the project work if SDP money is involved. So our chances in 2015 to go to construction for the roundabout are very good. So that's the announcements.
Cool.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Now, on the same issue though, these grant monies are administered by PSRC, and it requires that the city be GMA compliant. Right now, we are not GMA compliant because we don't have our transportation comp plan updated.
Nice, very nice.
That's great.
So, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long night.
I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Ron, and I feel like saying congratulations to us for your efforts. It's awesome.
Yeah, Ron, you're great.
Should I continue on?
Sure.
I have another thing. Gary emailed us with some questions regarding the, not questions, but wanting to get some information on the Cadman numbers. So I've got a packet together here, and I'll pass it around. The first two pages are the graphs that I handed out before. Okay, showed first the comparison of the the cars versus trucks during a weekday, and then the overall transportation stuff of a weekday versus weekend. So the blue line is the weekday. That is so that you can compare the Cadman numbers or the Cadman graphs of their findings, which are very similar to ours. You can see the pattern there. It's not much different at all. So just wanted, and then I didn't give you all the hard data because I didn't do it hard data, but I gave you at least the table which shows the comparison from year to year on the numbers. But this graph here is the most recent one. So pass that around so you have that information.
Ron, I wanted to say
hopefully that's what you wanted.
Yeah, right? Thank you very much for doing that. I brought all your old charts and graphs. I went through all the past meetings to get them. So thank you for putting them in a nice package. I appreciate that.
Do you have to make copies for the workers?
I can make some.
I've got a couple extra copies here. Here's I think one of those sets has a missing table. I don't know. Did somebody get one without one of these tables?
So, Ron, just for clarification,
sorry,
the Cadman graph.
Would you pass that over to?
What are the dates of that? Was that like the way back when?
No. This is the most one of the recent ones. I think it was the 2010.
Okay. Did you ever figure out who was doing? I asked you at one of the city council meetings if who was doing the other counting down there.
I don't know. I didn't find out. No.
The counts were not actually taken by Heflin. They had another firm do the counting. I can't remember the name.
It was Trastas.
That was
you guys, sorry. Yeah.
Now I'll shut up and
just clarify too, the counts, the metering process was the distance between axles that determined car versus truck, right?
You place two counters specific distance apart, and the speed at which a combination of different tires goes across that span determines whether or not it's a truck or car. It's built into the software and stuff like that, and it does the calculation, but yeah, it's basically what it is.
So just to clarify then, the petite memo that's dated May 23rd, 2012, the second page, the first bullet point, is what references the summary of all the Heflin data that we got from CAD, is that correct? It's the 2010?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, 14% higher.
One thing I just want to say about that is that I took the data from TrapStats that we got from the counts, and I plotted the curve, you know, with the hourly counts, and it almost perfectly mimics the lines. So it's pretty clear that it's representing the same traffic pattern, even though the counts are in the US. It's the same hourly variation. One of the things that maybe your question would be if the data is true because they missed an hour or missed a couple hours or something, but the data is consistent.
That's okay, I'll just say that's okay.
So, I'm just asking a question logistically, because if back when the topic was an assemblage of truck town, some kind of evaluation of I'm trying to recall the term we used. Not a mastermind group.
A citizen task force.
Task force. That's the term that was used. That got thrown to the council, and they said no, thank you, because it was a budget item.
Oh, okay.
That whole conversation that went over the course of months. I'm curious if we can somehow bring that back to life and still keep this moving forward, because I still think we've had, in essence, a year to wrap our arms around something we have not owned before that, and it's the island called Trucktown.
Well, in the report on, can't remember which page, there are two locations in which we kept the task force issue still in there, because that's what the Planning Commission recommended, to keep it in there as a statement to the council that they needed to, or you guys wanted them to look at it. And that is located
I remember seeing the comments in here, but I guess what I'm trying to get to is once we pass this, which is reviewed every, is it 10 years?
There's no specific time frame for it.
Well, GMA. Seven, you have to do it every seven. You can't do it more than every one time a year.
Okay.
Page 83 is listed as a recommendation.
For GMA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Right. So page 91, it's listed in there as item 2 of the roadway system improvements. It's not funded.
Yeah.
No, not applicable. But it's in there as an element.
Yep.
And then it's also listed on page 83. Now, I've been asked to say a little bit more to you guys, so you get to hear me a little bit longer. I want to just highlight from the previous version of the report to this version what changes that I made to the plan, so you will understand that and don't have to necessarily leaf through everything or whatever, or if you haven't done it already. I did not address any of the goals and objectives and stuff like that. I felt that was in good hands with Jenna, so I focused mainly on two areas. One was presentation of what streets were classified as arterials, collectors, and local streets, and wanted to make sure that the change that we're proposing is directly correlated with the previous approved functional classifications in the 2003 plan. The previous document had lots of different other streets in there that were not correctly classified from the old plan, and so I wanted to straighten that whole thing up and really show you that the changes that we were doing, which were listed on page, this is being recorded, isn't it? Page 79, right? Yeah, page 79. That list of changes to the functional classifications is considerably smaller than the previous document that we had. The other area in...
Ron, is there a reason why the future collector isn't on that list? I'm just wondering. So if you look at the map on page 39, there's the future collector that goes to 428th Avenue Southeast.
Right.
And that's not on that list. I just
because that's not a revised classification. It's a new street.
Gotcha.
Comes up with a classification then, but it's not a revision to the plan. Revision.
That's why
okay.
The table has a header.
That's right. the other area that I focused on was the level of service tables that were, well, I didn't focus on them, but Chris actually was directed to look at those level of service classifications for the various intersections, because in the previous document, the level of service was displayed for the intersections based upon the average for all legs of that intersection. It was, so it gave an overall rating for the entire intersection. What we're supposed to really do is provide a level of service designation for the worst leg of the intersection. So we've revised the document to show which intersections have a leg that is worse than the average, and we show what that number really is. So you'll see on there some of those intersections went from a B to an F or something. You know, there was a change in the classification. And who's trying to call me at this hour? I'll let it go to the voicemail. Sorry about that. So anyway, that's sort of one of the major changes you'll see in there. It doesn't change the results of our study in terms of the capital improvements that we're recommending, because those improvements were based upon addressing the worst leg of the intersection or the level of service for that intersection. So it doesn't impact the overall capital program that's being proposed. It just more clarifies and gives some connectivity between the table that's in there for the level of service and the capital program side. Okay.
So worst would be?
F is worst.
But it's determined the worst because of density, volume of traffic? How does that?
Because of delay in order to make the turning movement through that intersection.
Okay.
So if you're delayed like 1 minute from being able to make that movement, then you're at a level of service F. If you're delayed 15 seconds, maybe it's a level of service B or something like that. So it depends on how long you're delayed at that intersection to make that movement once you've reached that intersection or gotten in the queue.
I think the best example is North Bend Way in Ballarat, where it was shown it as an intermediate and it became an F. Because if you're approaching North Bend Way from Ballarat, you're trying to make a left turn, you're going to wait there for a while.
Yep. Ron, if I can just ask, is there any discussion, because if the level of service is a minute with a stoplight, how can that, if it's a D or E or an F with a stoplight at 1 minute, how is that reasonable? I would think that the wait time at a stoplight would be something like a minute and a half or 2 minutes being a standard. I don't know how they come up with this.
Well, the delays are standardized, so...
Every red light's an F.
It would seem like that. It would seem like that. It depends on the intersection, too. Some of the signals are demand activated. In other words, you approach it. If you're the only one in the intersection there, it'll turn green for you, and you can go and you know, you're out of there real quick. Some of them are on timed type, a timed system. So... You're delayed for 15 seconds for each leg, you know, until you get around to yours. Or it's a combination of the two. You approach there and, each leg is busy, but it clears out in less time than the timed version. It will automatically trip off and go to the next one quicker. So it depends on how the system's set up. And then, yes, you could be, like in Federal Way, they have such long, long waits at one intersection for the light to change. Those things are at level service F all the time. You could get that way here at a signalized intersection. But if one leg tends to be longer than the others, you might want to change the timing on that so that it clears it out a lot. It takes a little bit longer to clear it out, and then shorten the legs on the other ones so that it comes back around to clear it out again. It's a scheduling issue with the programmer on how to keep the level of service either down to a minimum on a bad leg or equal for all of them.
So the city has adopted a level service of D, but how much weight do we then put in E's and F's in our plan? Are they, you know, how do we determine one F from a little issue versus one F from a 5 minute wait time? What do we have to decide?
It's,
That's why it becomes, come out with ABC,
yeah,
F is not clear.
It becomes not the only criteria then to use for determining which intersection to do a capital improvement program on. There could be accident-related information too. If one intersection has more accidents than the other, you may want to address that one first. If there are more pedestrians in one area than the other one, you may want to address that first. There are a lot of other factors to consider, and of course, there's always politics involved too. So we try to put the politics aside as much as we can. Make the recommendation based upon information we have, and then we'll let the council go from there.
Thank you very much.
So those are the main areas that I sort of looked at in here. There were a couple minor changes I made to the capital program. I took out a couple projects in there that were on streets that were at the intersections of I-90. They were not in our jurisdiction. We should not be putting them in to our capital program unless they're within our city limits.
Can you clarify, are those on 436, exit 32?
Correct. And I think there was a chart in there that showed some proposed pedestrian improvements going to the east of the school. I took that out too because that's outside our jurisdiction. So that's my summary.
Okay, then the only thing left to do would be to go item by item through what was your motions of the long meeting so you can confirm those edits were made. Unless you've already kind of looked that through and feel good about that, they were made. And we can do it item by item unless you have no preference in doing that.
My ads are in there.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. That saves some energy. Okay. So should we just open it up to questions?
Mr. Chair, would you entertain a motion?
Talk to me, Goose.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the June 2012 transportation development update for the City of North Bend.
We have a second?
Second.
Discussion? Any objections? How's that work?
Question for you. When you make that motion, are you just opening up for discussion afterwards then? Oh, okay. All right.
There's discussion.
Anybody want to go first? Sorry, I wasn't.
It doesn't have to work. It doesn't have to be work.
Well, let's take our chair's suggestion, which is on page 18. And Rob had sent an email requesting a change to policy 2.1.
I meant to print that email.
2.6.
What was it?
2.2.6.
So I guess what would the city come up with as an ordinance in order to enact compliance with that?
Ordinance.
I think that's what he was getting at, right?
Well, it would be a code amendment. It would be a code amendment or a code addition to probably performance standards related to truck stops that would require that the facilities provide this type of infrastructure to mitigate further impact of peddling.
So we don't have to necessarily come up with the criteria then?
Tonight, no. No, that would be our code amendment process to do that.
So I have a tiny amendment to insert the word the. You want me to just make his motion?
That would be great.
Okay. So motion to amend policy 2.2.6 after the word require. For any permit meeting the city established thresholds for compliance with the new code, comma, and then continue on.
So the between meeting the
meeting and the city.
Okay.
And is that just as Robert wrote?
Except for the in between meeting and the city.
Sorry, I thought we already did second. Sorry, my mistake. It seems like the. That's going to be the. Any objections? Motion passes.
I think I'm going to move up to chapter 3. Anybody before this?
What page are you on?
Page 35. And so I emailed out, it's WASHDET corridor study for I-90. I looked it up on the internet, and then I ended up emailing because I looked at the street 465th Avenue doesn't connect to I-90. It's on the other side of the river, as a matter of fact. And so I'm not sure if there's something wrong with the plan or if they did something intentionally that they wanted 436 or should it be 468. And I don't know. So I would like to amend that to one of those two so it's clear, is it exit 32 or exit 34, but I don't have an answer. I don't know.
You're under the head of plan improvements?
Yes. I don't know if anyone else has any insight to watch that study.
Yeah, and that's a private road, so I live on that road.
There you go.
So it doesn't really make sense there.
But that's what's on the website in their internet address as well. I would, I guess I'd like to make a motion for staff to ensure that it's reflected correctly in our plan.
Yes, that's
whatever
good,
it is.
That's a good point.
Can we just call that administrative request?
Yep.
That must have just been posted recently, too, because it was not available at all 2 weeks ago.
Good catch, Mr. Badger.
And I don't know if it matters, but now the report, instead of spring 2012, is summer 2012.
So those are admin corrections.
Page 36. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't read the comments from Mr. Corsigan. I was going to make an insert. Prior to my motion, though, can I just ask, is there any reason why we don't have 2011-12 data in there, or is it just because at this time, I understand this started back in June a year ago, and then we had November and December. That wasn't the end of the winter. Now it is, and mm-hmm. I would like to insert that.
I don't know if it's available yet or not.
It was.
Yeah.
If you were to see it there.
It looked by the graph to be 89 hours.
If it's if you want to make a motion that we include 2012 and it's there, we'll do that. Absolutely.
And then you'll verify, because, I mean, it's on their WASHDET site.
Yeah.
The same chart, I think, sure. So I'd like to make a motion that we insert the 2011-12 pass closure hours in the interstate trucking section on page 36.
Motion's bad. That's been seconded. Discussion? Motion passes. And then the point of order there, is, did you mean to say 11 and 12?
Yes.
2011. Okay. I believe what these these are like I don't know if they're fiscal year numbers or if they're seasonal type numbers. I'm guessing fiscal year numbers. And so 11 to 12 is a fiscal year cycle. So it's not 2011 numbers and then 2012 numbers. It's
yes, it's
over
seasonal.
That cycle.
Yes,
yeah.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
It's 2011. Yeah. Okay.
Is that clear enough to work with?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got it. And I can shoot you a link if you need it.
I think, yeah. feel free, but I think we can find it.
And if we're still doing it, if it's done on a fiscal year, we're still in this fiscal year 2011-12, and we had some past closures this past week. So.
Well, I left my motion.
Still tallying him up.
Anybody else? I'm up to chapter 4. Yeah, I guess I had a question on page 58 in the table. It's item 21. It's rated as a B, but in the appendix B, it's rated as a C, or reflected as a C, I believe.
Where is the second source?
Appendix B, I guess, where LOSC was documented in the PMP calendar. So I don't know if I'm interpreting it differently or how it should be reflected. Appendix E is on page 133. I'm trying to find a lot of copies. Well, it says B or better, but then where LOC was documented in the PM peak hour. So it's kind of, it's describing both, and I didn't know if we would take one or the other, the AM peak or the PM peak. But
we could just confirm whether it's the B or the C.
I think we showed the B in table 6, and I think that's the most current thing that they're just doing.
Yeah. If you're comfortable, we'll confirm the correct number.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Carry on.
When the second baby comes, I'm not going to do this.
when is that, just so we can mark our calendar?
Any day now.
Oh, yeah?
Ah.
Cool.
Our public works director already took down on page 72 is looking at the table and items 17 and 18 or 36. I guess I could ask maybe for some assistance then. How do we go about addressing that if it's a jurisdiction of someone else but it becomes a frustration of the residents in our city?
Safety issue.
Or safety issue, yeah.
Well, we're not taking it out of the table. We're just taking it out of the capital program itself.
Right, because there was money in there for like lights or
traffic. I think so, yeah.
But it'll stay on in our list here.
Yeah, we'll still keep it in the table, recognizing that, you know, we've seen that level of service.
And that doesn't preclude us in the future of revisiting, if this became in issue for whatever reason doesn't prevent us from putting it back on the capital list 3 years from now, 5 years from now. If
I mean, obviously there's going to be, for 436, that's in our annexation or urban growth area. So we may annex that area in the future, and it then becomes our issue, I guess I should say. Maybe we'll never annex it because it is an issue, or we'll say, hey, DOT or King County, you need to address this before we annex it or something like that. So it helps to put it in, keep it in there for at least the annexation issues.
I think one other comment I would offer is that Washback commented on all the projects that we identified that were projects where they have jurisdiction, saying, hey, we don't have any money for any of these projects. And this is a useful exercise just to alert them that
we've identified any
issue and that there will need to be some cooperative process to identify.
And this intersection, these ramps, were identified in that study there as areas that need to be addressed. They've highlighted as potential solutions for those ramps as roundabouts or signals. So they've recognized the issue.
So my next question goes to North Bend Way, east and west. And when we put something on the transportation list, we're looking for the next few years of need. This is a 2030 projection, and thinking about the transportation, though, would it make sense to think about increasing the load of North Bend Way from downtown to Exit 32? And so I don't know if, because this is getting towards well, both rated an F, right? Do we want to put that as something on our list of possibilities as to increase it to two lanes or two lanes on one side, turn lanes, you know, just now that we've identified it as an F, because before it was a B?
Well, the number of lanes on the street is the level of service is not based upon roadway capacity. It's based upon the intersections to be able to handle the traffic that approaches the intersection. So because it's at level of service F, doesn't mean that the existing roadway can't handle the amount of traffic that's there. It's just that the intersection can't. So putting additional lanes in there may not solve it for the entire corridor. We need to continue to focus on how to get the people through that intersection.
I appreciate that. So knowing that, North Bend Way East and Mountside Road, is there a recommendation that we haven't yet included in our plan that we should think about to maybe plan for that volume? I know in the paper they touted the new video on King County's website about North Bend and mentioning Mountside. It is the most popular attraction in King County, right? One of the most popular mountains. This is that intersection. And so how our guests, egress and ingress, that part is going to be something that they will focus on.
Well, the
project.
What's listed, the 2030 base on table 8 is without the projects? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you go to page 75, which is with the recommended improvements, you see the difference, what happens at those intersections. The Mount Si, North Bend Way at Mount Si Road, level service F, goes to E with the roundabout, but
where's the shift of traffic that's taking traffic away from that intersection?
Well, there's new connections that were identified move that traffic around there. So this one benefits in part from the new connection that's assumed to the south that parallels the freeway.
runoff from a running growth.
And then what's important, too, about that intersection is that, you know, and for this type of plan, we want to look at average conditions, which was March or whatever, which largely isn't when you're getting, I mean, right now I live out on that road and you get a sunny day, and as if anyone's been out there, it's probably double what it is. So, I mean, there is a bigger issue on those days, but yeah, I don't know how much I believe, I guess, traffic's really going to shift with some of those other improvements, just because there's just nowhere to go as far as the routes, but. But we do have an improvement identified. It's just not on the list yet.
Yeah, on the six-year TIP, it's not on there yet. It's get a few of these projects off our six-year TIP, and maybe in about 2 years it'll show up on the list or so.
Could I mention one
thing
that probably hasn't been within your plan in place with the institution of the Discover Passes? Hikers for Willis High routinely park along North Bend Way. As far, you know, they're headed towards North Bend on the north side of the North Bend Way. And the the amount of traffic that has been pushed out of those lots because of the implementation of that Discover Pass has really adversely affected traffic along there. Especially when you consider that what's the first little street headed north on Monshire Road, there's a little gravel lot there. That guy frequently charges half the cost of a day pass for parking. He creates his own income source, but he also creates a traffic problem. And so the implementation of that for Discover Passes has really adversely affected traffic flow on Mountside Road and at that intersection.
I think a lot of that's forced too on the nice days is even with the Discover Pass, they're full. Those parking lots are absolutely full. I mean, there are on light days you will see some cars parked out and be an empty lot, but for the most part that's happening because those things are just jam packed full. But yeah, the sale of parking is going on up at Mount Si, and then now with New Trail, there's no parking up there. And I know there's been a lot of issues with parking on that road, but that's a King County issue.
So back to your question, Scott, you were asking for what change is going to support the F to E, and that's what I'm not sure, I don't know where that is.
Well, if I understand what Chris was saying, it's the model, and when you put in these projects, there's some shifts in traffic, which then would change the ultimate volume that you're seeing from the without projects to with projects.
You may not see a shift in traffic. Most of the shifts occur in the downtown area where you're trying to change the stuff.
So some of the traffic was shifted off North Bend Way because of the alternate route. So
to Cedar Falls Way, maybe.
North Bend Way must be creating more gaps for outside because we didn't have an intersection identified.
Right.
So that's what I'm assuming is because of
So Chris, I'm just trying to get a reference too. It's really easy for us to go A, B, C, D, F and have some mental note of what that means. But I'm also noticing the delay, this column, delay cube here on page 72. The numericals that are there, those are multiples of some number of seconds, right?
Those are the seconds.
They are seconds.
So an F, which is 435, is it not 435 seconds? It's something else, right?
No, it's 435 seconds.
452 is a lot deeper F than 16.1.
Okay, all right. So here's dramatic. An F to a C, 17.9 to 435. So I guess what I'm getting to is I just want to make sure we can come back to this with some teeth after people move into the new houses that are being built, that people move into the apartments and hotels that are planned between now and 7 years from now.
Every year, we can come back.
Okay. Because then I think, if we fix an intersection, we do a great job of moving an F to a C, or we just move three intersections around it to D's because we didn't get it all together at the right time.
And keep in mind, this document that you guys are going through is a huge amendment than what would normally happen if we did one every year or every 2 years because of the annexation, because we hadn't had any of these things evaluated. So you're looking at one of the biggest updates you'll have probably, and then the next few will be kind of what you're talking about, dialing in on, okay, are our numbers still correct for these intersections, and do we need to...
Yeah, because we'll have a few of those projects implemented by the time we go through this again.
Yeah.
We'll see how numbers shift, you know, and where the shifts are occurring. And then we can take a look and say, oh, well, let's see, our shifts weren't exactly where we wanted them to go. Let's make some changes or something like that.
And we can address it annually or more often, I guess, maybe.
Every year we open the comp plan up for a docket process.
Yeah.
If it gets docketed, or if any of you want to docket it, we bring it forward.
And in the meantime, we've passed this massive thing so we can apply for funding.
Exactly.
So that when we talk about it annually, we'll actually have some money to deal with it.
Exactly.
The other thing that I think is important is that, you know, there have been some relatively recent changes, including the transportation benefit district. So even though that has sort of its own organizational life, it's important to get it integrated with the rest of your funding schemes and incorporated in your capital programs for PSRC and other granting agencies. So again, I think that's an important point because it's obvious that you have a dedicated funding source of your own that you can use to match TID or to match PSRC. So that helps you gain leverage and the scoring points.
Just to give you an example on the item one, where you have 435 seconds, through our downtown plaza project, we may change Main Avenue to one-way streets, mm-hmm. eliminating the left turn movements off of Main to North Bend Way,
yep.
and totally get rid of the problem.
Yep.
So those things can happen as a result of a project that wasn't intended to directly address that issue. Sort of a secondary benefit.
Yeah, seconds turn to hours because they're shopping.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Reading into those seconds can be a little bit, once you start getting over 150, 200, some of those softwares,
yeah.
working with them, I know they just kind of go exponential once you're blowing the capacities over a certain number. So that's more detail than you need, but those, I wouldn't read into those.
Yeah,
those too much.
So I promise I'm almost done. Line 20 and 21, 468th Avenue Southeast and the I-90 westbound and eastbound ramps are B's here. And this is the 2030 estimate, where in Appendix E and in the November 3rd memo from Petit, we have been rated at F by that time.
You're referencing the graph on 72?
72 or 75, which is with the recommendations, which I appreciate, and I wish I could have talked to Mr. Garrell further. So
again, in the
20 and 21, yeah. It states LOSOF by 2015, actually, in Appendix E on page 133.
I think there's the thing that's different here is that Appendix E reports on analysis that was conducted for the permitting of the North Bend gravel pit EIS. So it's an analysis that was conducted in a different manner using different methodology by others.
But I think on November 3rd, 2011, intersection LOS I have from our past meeting. It said, that one's 436.
See, what this kind of goes to the methodology that was used to calculate the future conditions. We're basically using an annual average increase of, I think, 2.5% a year. And what we've done instead is to use, you know, actual land use forecast to model that future condition. So it's, you know, it's a little more precise approach, I would say, than what was used in the cabinet plans. I think a good example of that is just the forecast of the F by 2015. That's 3 years from now. The traffic counts that are out there today are less than they were in 2007. So we could conclude that unless there's a real change in operations or employment or something else out there, it's unlikely to happen.
I think what we know in 2015, the paving of Middle Fork Road, we heard from the school district with an extra 200 school children at the school. Is it a 4% annual increase in trucking, I think you used as an estimate? Does that justify a consistent rating from B to B after 30 years that we showed? Or does it stay at B after all that time is my guess. With no... Out of all the recommendations, I think, that you put into the plan from widening the street, turn lanes, traffic signals, there's none of that in our plan. There's nothing there on the list, but it stays at B. So I guess I'm wondering, do you feel that we're going to address the 3, 5, 7 year traffic increase in that area, not to mention if they build a new stadium where all that rock comes from, I would think that in mind for the hockey team that's being discussed. If we're doing some underground tunnel, do they need concrete or bridge work? Do they need concrete? I just see as those truck projects get spent up, it's going to get busier. So I'm just wondering if we ought to take a second look at what your recommendations are and put them on the list. So,
I guess there's one thing I need to mention is that as a condition of the EIS for the camera operation, you know, they are required for this ongoing and they're on the hook to contribute to installation signal and evaluation, you know, for needed other improvements in the future if they're warranted by the change that they have caused. So I think that agreement is still in place and would, in fact, help identify a problem and help to identify the needed level of improvements when that occurs, if it occurs. So, this set of analysis that we did was based on the land use changes that your planning department helped come up with, including the expansion at the school site, addition to the school, and the other stuff that's been identified as improvements in the area up there. So that's not to say that there couldn't be other changes that will occur that would change the future performance. Not warranted, I guess, based on the analysis that we've done.
So the pain is that it was indicated as an F, and we're indicating it in our document as a B, which seems very far from the F. That if you look at the numbers that are here, you know, the increase in students, the chain warehouse, the hundreds of homes,
the B is kind of a big jump. Is that?
Yeah, and I'm looking on the back side of the memo where it has the WSDOT parking study, and that has by 2030 nighttime truck parking demand for that area is going to go from 175 to 443 spaces, a 253% increase. So
if you cut that in half, you're still going through F to a B is it justified?
Well, I guess I want to point out a couple of things on that same paragraph, in that same section. It also talks about assumed growth in parking truck demand. This is the third bullet. Assumed increase is 4% a year. But that is the same methodology, I would say, as was used in the North Bend Gravel Mining and Final EIS on the prior page, where they assumed background traffic was going to grow at a rate of 2.5% a year. I just got through reading a very nice little introductory piece in the ITE Journal that the Institute of Transportation Engineers written by the international president, who said, you know, the days when we could just assume an average annual increase are over. This is a guy who's probably about my age saying, you know, us boomers are retiring. We've been driving the population, employment, incarceration, you know, all these rates for the last 35 years, and times have changed. We can't predict based on that anymore. The trends have totally changed. Traffic volumes have been flat to slightly declining or staying the same for most of the last decade. So I just say these average annual changes are a very oversimplified way of trying to approach the world.
I agree with you. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, because what we could debate probably for a long time is whether the, because I see all both perspectives, and I'm wondering if there's a validity in saying, hey, we have potentially some unique scenarios coming down the road here in this area. And is there, and I'm asking these two guys who deal with these charts and the levels of service more, but is there a way to say, almost put a parenthesis around the B and say, based on, you know, the evaluation done by, in this kind of methodology, it was an F, therefore the city intends to reevaluate or, you know, basically keep an eye on this. And we're calling it out that there is a kind of a unique scenario. Because in the end, I don't think we're going to answer probably your concern, because I see your concern saying, hey, I don't think this is a B. That's basically what you're saying. But is it an F? And, you know, and methodology is methodology. Some are right, some are wrong. We do our best. But so that's why I'm wondering, is if Ron and Chris, is there a way to say, hey,
I think since there's a difference of opinion on the actual level of service projected for that intersection based on either methodology or projections for traffic or what have you, maybe what we do is we put another footnote in Table 8, and under that footnote we reference the information on Appendix D indicating that level service F is indicated by such and such, and that way we're recognizing both analyses, and yeah, we need to monitor and see really what's going to happen in that area.
But the other thing I would add is that just what you're saying, Ryan, that ongoing monitoring is already happening. We've also recommended a task force to keep an eye on that area, and that there are recommendations identified for the area already. I think in terms of paying attention to it, there's a mechanism identified there already. The other thing that's, I think, important is that, you know, the gravel operation could change very quickly. It could turn on a dime, just like you're saying, Gary. And that could have a very big impact on what happens there. I think that's why they were conditioned to monitor the situation. So I think there's another trigger there. And we could be more specific about referring to that going monitoring operation.
The big thing with this table is just first recognizing maybe what the level of service projection is going to be for that area. But we don't have anything in our plan that is a capital improvement to address it because it's still outside our jurisdiction. So it's more of like Sherwood wanting to make sure that we're sending a message to other parties that, hey, there's a problem in here. And let's address it.
Should I just in the memo it references 137 single family residents this way? I assume that was the possibilities. What could be possible?
You're saying the Appendix C memo?
Yeah. So my question is does that include the most recent inquiries, middle, whatever you want to call it, or the 45 that are spread around the river?
Can you just point to
yes.
Okay.
It's on the third line under North Bend Gravel Operations Final ES.
Sorry. Oh, okay, I see it.
No, I think if you look at page 31 and 32, those figures summarize the assumed increases in and numbers of residential units. And so, you know, the, I guess, area TAZs 8, 9, and 10 are certainly in areas that would influence the traffic on 468. And those are, you know, up in the range of 75 and higher units per area.
So I just have a question, though. If we're going to do a footnote to the memo, the recommendations that are in there, whether they're inside the jurisdiction or outside the jurisdiction, do they have any adherence to the overall plan or transportation improvements, or should we put them on the list? That's my question. I don't know if just being in the memo as part of the plan, as in the appendix, that makes them something for consideration if it's warranted.
Say that again, please.
Yeah, I'm not quite following it either.
So if you have the recommendations from Pratik in our document as Appendix E, and we have an issue, do we go to those or do we need to think about it and pass something on our list? So if it's not part of our table of improvements.
So you're talking about extraterritorial projects where you would essentially have to participate or cooperate with
I'm thinking on page 85, our list of projects for 84. Motion and then we can move on from here. I'll make a motion to add the Pratik recommended solutions document in Appendix E, including line 20 on page 84 of widening 468th Avenue to three lanes from I-90 to intersection of Southeast 146th Street. 21, installing a traffic signal at the Southeast 146th or 468th Avenue Southeast. And that would be, I believe, Cadman's cost, or they've already funded that one, right? Installing an 8-foot shoulder, that's point 22. And point 23, installing traffic signals in right turn lanes on 468th Avenue Southeast and I-90 eastbound off-ramp.
Is there a second, or do you need to restate the motion?
That's basically what is documented in the metal with a slight variation for coming through. And I'll give this to him writing.
So I'm trying to stick with you. I haven't heard a second. So it's a motion.
So you're basically saying, just so that is to add the things that are in here as into our list.
Into our list of projects when funds become available.
And the problem, again, with that is you have portions of those projects that are outside our jurisdiction. So we're spending money to help somebody else's roadway system.
Responsibility. Yeah.
That'd be the traffic signals?
That'd be the lane widening from the corridor, from the off ramps, on ramps, signals at the on ramps. North Bend city limits start at North Bend Way and 468 and go north. Our jurisdiction stops at North Bend Way. Actually, if you take a look at our boundaries, we do not include the interior portion of that intersection. We circumvent around on the west side and north side of that intersection for our boundaries.
I respectfully withdraw my motion.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
It would seem in this deliberation with these kinds of data that that data is something that the LOS system was dependent on. It may make sense to cede some of these extraterritorial things and footnote them or however you want to do it so that when, not in the event, the regional transportation project is commenced, that those could be identified as items for the outside the participants from outside of the city of North Bend to consider and participate, rather than have to start over and re-identify a series of events. It would seem to me that knowing that there will be a regional transportation group convened, it would make sense to today plant the seeds for that series of events that others would pay for.
Thus the reference to the memo.
Yes.
Yeah, reference.
Right. Mm-hmm. And identify it in a way so that it could become a guideline to the regional transportation participants who are outside the city of North Bend, so they can step right up and know in advance what the agenda may include.
So the footnote should really sort of make that statement right there.
In all instances, not just 468, but
not
anything that's extraterritorial.
So if we get into that, what's the best way to articulate that we know that those things are there, but they don't fit in under the heading of our jurisdiction?
Well, I mean, could you just put a note in the beginning of this whole Appendix X that essentially indicates that these are...
That access addresses areas outside the city limits, but within our transportation corridors,
things that we still care about.
Do we do that as an additional
appendix or a
headed paragraph?
Just in that section, yeah.
Well, you could also address it in a footnote on what page number 72.
Just reference the whole section.
The footnote for line 20 and 21, could that be added to both the table 8 and the table 9?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there a motion starting now? The one forming? Do I hear one?
Not only 20 and 21, but you apply it to 17 and 18 also.
Correct.
Oh, right. Because those are the two.
On
monitoring program, like the, to be on the recommended project, it has to be an actual physical project. Monitoring programs are just done like as a separate
just item, as a study.
Just as like a study that the city takes out of the general fund or something.
It really doesn't cost us anything to just put out some counters and get the data and stuff like that. It's I wouldn't associate any costs with something like that.
Right. And I mean, because there's a drastic difference between the two, I guess. But as I see it, I mean, the EIS was completed in 2001. And I think we all know there's a lot of things that are going on out there, and things are likely going to change and may be different than what the 2030 shows here. But monitoring seems like the simplest thing. And rather than calling out what's improvements exactly now, I just feel like that report is very dated. But we all know there's a lot of things coming in, so for me the most important thing would be just to see, let's watch it, let's keep an eye on it, it's on our radar, and then when something comes up, then if it's in our jurisdiction that we can address, then we'll do that.
Yeah, I think I'd like to pass a motion separately that the city conduct a study of their part of Middle Fork Road and another point along Southeast 140th so that we have a baseline from either 2, 5, or 7 years from now of that data versus the off-ramp area of I-90 that focused on the truck traffic, which seems to be outside our jurisdiction, focus on the residential and other points that are inside our city.
Yeah, once a year we put out counters in the same period and see if there's any change.
I got what you're saying, and I keep it under the heading of task force, because that has to be evaluated on an ongoing basis, because we haven't done it really thoroughly yet once.
I don't think you need to make a recommendation necessarily for the study. You can just make a recommendation to the staff to do this or whatever as a ongoing operational thing or whatever, so that we'll have that information when we look at the plan again. I don't know. I mean, that's my thought.
Yeah.
The last motion was withdrawn. It wasn't seconded. So
there is not a motion on the table at the moment.
My only thought to that is that we have the Heffron study that is being done yearly on that segment, so we do have data coming in. There's also, as you know, everyone, there's development applications coming in that are studying the area as well if they're being developed in the area. So I think the city is getting a snapshot from a couple different sources. We're getting those. I think maybe we just need to be more in tune to that. But the Heffron one's the one that's right there, so that's the one if we can stay in tune to, then that's going to be the state on a yearly basis.
And I think the one gap between what you just talked about was the safe routes to school, was the pedestrian level of activity when you got trucking and other stuff.
That's a perfect segue.
That's a good
point. Point 13 on page 84 is 468th Avenue Southeast and 144th Street to Middle Fork Road is a continuous sidewalk on the east side of the roadway with pedestrian scale lighting. And while I support the connectivity from North Bend Way, Southeast 140th to the school, now we're taking a commercial area and we're putting sidewalk right into where the children are in a mandatory walk zone. And so I'm just raising that as a possible objection to some parents.
Which line was it?
I'm sorry. 13. On page 84.
The kids aren't.
It'd be safer, and I'm not objecting to.
Yeah, it's a safety issue. I don't think there's any connectivity for the students because there's no residential now down in that area. I think mainly this is just.
I support a safe place for the drivers to walk. I'm just saying, when there's 7, 8, 9, 10 year old kids,
I brought this up before, the whole stretch to me, the idea of putting a sidewalk along the road as a safety feature, there's a degree of insanity there because you're creating demand to be in harm's way because the safety is not coming from a 6-inch curb. You're actually enticing more activity in the unsafe zone based on the straightaway road and the probable traffic that's there. I'm all about creating a trail system that connects the dots, paved, lighted, however you want to call it. But I'm not sure there's a place to say, but I wouldn't spend a dime to put a sidewalk along a busy street to bring my kids to school.
In our transportation.
Spend a lot to get them through a trail.
In our road standards, we do have an allowance or a deviation from the standard road section to do things just like that. So we wouldn't have to call that out necessarily specifically in the transportation list. When it comes to the actual design of that, we could think about that.
Yeah. And
But again, line 13 is not for the kids.
Right.
It's for...
But the corridor of access, plus the walkway, right?
Yeah. And a walkway is going to go in when that piece of property on the east side of that street develops or redevelops.
I think the thing that you may be missing, there's an awful lot of pedestrians in that area, especially guys with trucks and park. They go to the restaurant and they're walking around, and right now they're walking in the ditch or on the shoulder.
Yep.
Well, most likely what's going to happen with this portion, this project, is that it will be done by a developer. It's not going to be funded by the city, most likely. But I don't know. Whatever.
I'll bring that up again when I hear the story.
Chair, I'm done.
Bye. Thank you.
What's supposed to be there? Number 15.
Sir.
Number 15?
It's a secret project.
Three.
There's nothing associated to it, but just curious what.
I think what happened is there was a project in there that we deleted, and the table that was there didn't eliminate, we didn't accidentally forgot to eliminate that cell.
Okay.
That's my guess. Okay. I just.
And then I had two just very, very minor edits. So on page 16, policy, Gary went through this real fast, and I was like, wow, I'm 20 pages behind, and so you're sort of quick there. So policy number 151. I thought that we had removed the word adequate street rights. New belts are required to dedicate the curb adequate street rights of way. Just an edit that when I went for prepare documents. And then, this seems like a super thing to do. Yeah, we sometimes, especially early on in documents, can come up on shorts. And then policy 2.25, I remember very vividly having a conversation about this, make education materials available to the North Bend truck stop, and we had changed it to at the North Bend truck stop.
Yes.
I realize it's minor, but it was something went round about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they don't have to come get it, it's actually there already.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said,
I
just was doing
too.
The side-by-side comparison of my edits, and there was another one that I'm not sure if it was my bad notes or not. 135, I had noted that we had removed it a while ago, but I couldn't verify or confirm that. I feel like you can.
What page?
It's on page 15, policy 1.3.5. Maybe it's my imagination.
question. You're talking to me about what is different. 135, as I read it now, you're saying it should be different?
No, she thought she was eliminated.
We had taken the whole thing out.
Okay.
That's what I had recollected.
I don't remember.
So I couldn't verify or confirm, because I had it noted there, and I was like, really? And I looked something else that was still there, and I thought maybe I just did a bad edit. So I was hoping that Gary could verify that. Obviously, maybe I was in
January, April, and February.
Okay, that's all I have.
Anyone else? Comments? Because the next thing I can hear happening is request for a motion to approve this document.
Motion on the table.
It's already on the table.
It's already on the table.
We're still dancing around on it.
We're in discussion.
Okay, thank you. Is that like the first thing somebody said?
Yeah.
And then we've walked over it into other motions? Okay, I'm not following the rules of order here. I apologize.
Well, I've made attempts.
Any other comments or questions? So apparently there's a motion on the table. Can it be restated?
The motion was to approve the transportation element update dated June 2012 for the City of North Bend. As amended.
The second?
Second.
Question first. That the amendments would include proposed changes from Sherwood, too?
Yes.
Okay.
And the footnotes.
And those this evening. Discussion.
Yes, this evening, yeah.
Okay.
So, just for clarification, please restate the motion.
Make a motion that we pass the updated transportation, the transportation element update final report dated June 2012 for the City of North Bend as amended.
Second. Thank you. Motion is made and seconded. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none. Motion passes. Staff is on this, right? Anything else from us on this?
No.
Okay.
So other thing on that is we did bring some sparkling cider.
I was going to say, I read hard cider. Is that, did I misread that?
Yeah. Oh,
well, so, well, instead of wine bag.
I'll be back.
See you later.
I have a storm drain comp plan to bring to you guys next.
I think I have to set some time before a meeting and just sit down with you and get all my questions and points, and that way I can save us some time.
Okay.
And I'll let you get in the bottle.
Oh, I'll do that too.
Pass it around.
Shake it first. I thought you were not serious.
Of course I was serious.
Okay.
Yes. We're just waiting on being able to open it.
Yeah.
Don't cork, it's probably safe.
We opened up two bottles yesterday at the Economic Development Commission for the grants too. So this is going around.
Making the right sound.
This is not the right tool for the job.
Yeah.
Okay. Jenna left. I have to leave too. So we'll see you all some other date.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Congratulations. And all that.
Ron, thank you.
Don't say that.
I
don't mind.
Are you going to have a party?
You can change your mind about 5 minutes.
It's going to be a big party.
Before you use that date.
No, unfortunately not. There's somebody at home that doesn't want me to change my date.
I hear that for matching grants and make more.
I'm sorry?
Back as a consultant for an application for grants.
I would like to do that.
Make more. Put together some kind of percentage.
Really, I hope that they keep me on at least as contract person for some of the project management or something like that.
As it should be.
Because I've been here over 10 years, and it's like a second home to me, and I don't want to leave it, you know, totally. I want to come back and continue to improve the place and work on it. So, any words you can spread to the city administrator to do that, that would be great. Don't tell my telephone to go there.
Well, I imagine you have a good honeydew list to deal with somewhere.
How about a grant consultant for the TBD?
Oh, there you go.
A percentage bit.
Yeah. Whatever works. Whatever works. I'm on vacation next week. I'm going to Whistler, so I'll see everybody when I get back, I guess.
Thank you, Ron.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
so a toast to Ron for this.
You're here.
For spending some time.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
From June to June.
See you next time.
This isn't laced with anything, is it? As they go outside, I'll have to probably go out this way. All right. See you all later.
And Chris, too.
All right. Following the course of our agenda, shall we open the hearing for the urban forestry plan and street tree regulations?
Sure.
So I hereby open the hearing for the urban forestry plan and street tree regulations.
Give you guys a summary, just since you're guests here, in case you want to comment. What this is we've developed a kind of a master plan for addressing public trees, how they're planted, where they're planted, care and maintenance requirements and so forth that we apply to ourselves, and then also via a street tree permit process for the care and management by adjacent property owners. So for people that live along a right-of-way that has a street tree in front of their house, that tree is within their care as a part of kind of their front yard extended. And so we've made a number of changes that the Planning Commission requested at the last meeting, and I'm going to open up for any comments the public might have on that and go back to Planning Commission deliberation.
So we open for public comment. Anyone from the public wish to comment?
Can we put Christmas lights on it?
Yeah. Any other comments from the public? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and continue our discussion.
Thank you all for your work on that presentation. I know it was a tough slog.
Danson. Thank you. So, Mike, I'm going to let you keep running with this.
Yeah. So if you guys had a chance to look through the edits, we tried to address just about everything that you guys provided comments on the last meeting. Added a map, identifying the street locations where the city is responsible for the street trees as opposed to the adjacent property owner. And then just about everything else that you provided comments on. So if you guys want to run through it, or if you're ready to make a recommendation.
I'll just ask a question. I did not make it to the last meeting that this was discussed. I don't know if it was brought up.
It was an awesome meeting. You missed a really good meeting. Yeah. I just want you to know.
I don't know. It happens sometimes. So I've read through this generally, and I always catch things that I would call tone.
Mm-hmm.
Trees are really important, but it's less important to me that we tell a property owner what to do with their trees. And the tone in this, and many of the phrases are used as if we're suggesting or telling, frankly, a property owner what they can do with their trees.
This only applies within rights-of-way and public properties.
Right.
And the trees are not planted by the private property owner. They're planted by the city or by a project that then conveys and dedicates the trees to the city. So it's for the protection of a public resource.
Is it just planted trees or those that already exist?
It is just planted trees and trees that are defined as significant trees within existing rights-of-way.
Okay. And the the line that creates a responsibility or a commitment from the owner and not the city, how does that operate within the
There's
public right-of-way?
There's not an obligation to the owner for maintenance. There is a protection against damage. So if you're just leaving the tree alone and it happens to get bigger and bigger and bigger and drops limbs, that's not the property owner's liability. But if the property owner decides that they want to go give a haircut to the tree, and it's a really bad haircut, then the property owner can be held responsible for that.
It's in the right-of-way.
Yes.
And just to clarify, right-of-way, many homes are maintaining a right-of-way as if it is their own.
Yes.
Because the way the right-of-ways were created back in prior time.
And current time.
In current time. You've got utility lines and underground, exactly. All those allocations are for community use. So I guess I'm still coming back to the same point. Even though it's a, quote, right-of-way, the right-of-way is a burden, technically, on the property owner's property. It's still their property, but some of their property rests in the right-of-way. It's kind of like an easement, correct?
It's not like an easement.
I'm not trying to use legal jargon here.
The boundary ends, and they have a kind of a informal use of the area within the right-of-way in front of the property. So it's theirs. They mow the lawn on the planter strip, and there are trees within that right-of-way planter strip that are to be protected through this ordinance.
So the right-of-way, I really don't want to take this call for long, but the right-of-way definition is key to this. It's how would you describe, without too much legalese, a right-of-way for a
right-of-way
typical residential neighborhood?
The public property. Okay. The purposes of streets and sidewalks and utilities.
Okay. So not private property?
No.
Okay. Then we're clear. Anything else? I'm not asking you, man.
I do, but would you like a motion first?
Yeah, I was
going to
say, do we want to have a motion first?
I mean, I don't know if we have any more deliberation or not.
Motions are always welcome.
So, I'll make a motion to approve the urban forestry plan and street regulations
document. Second motion.
Discussion,
yes. page 4, item number 4. Area B shown in figure A. The figure B is represented on page 7, and I'm not sure if that just didn't get updated to figure A, or if there should be.
It's correct. It's just because figure A is a big fold-out figure.
Oh, is that the one that's...
And, it's located at the back of the document. So, because it's kind of a separate PDF, larger document, you can't just drop it into the plan, so it has to sit separate.
Maybe I could make then a motion to insert after figure A the words located at the end of this document.
So now we're going to pull Robert's rules. You can't make a motion within a motion.
I didn't make a motion.
I'm just throwing this out because that's what happened to me last time. There was a motion and a second that was just made about approval of this. Now we're discussing that. So making a motion inside of that discussion doesn't fit the program. So discussion can go on.
We just did that for the whole transportation.
Absolutely. That's like I caught it. Like, let's not do this again. So you have to resolve the motion, which right now we're in discussion on the motion.
It doesn't necessarily have to be in the form of a motion. You can offer a suggestion.
Yeah, all day long. Let's talk.
All right. So we'll discuss.
Yeah.
So perhaps it would be helpful to insert some instructional text such as located at the end of the document.
That's fine.
On page 5, line 2, or point 2, species of new street trees shall be approved by the Community Economic Development Director. When we are looking at point 8, we talk about new and replacement trees. So I'm just wondering, would replacement also fit as well as new?
So, I'm not understanding.
So, species of new and replacement trees shall be approved by?
Those don't have to be approved by the community development director, just because those within the downtown core have to be that particular species.
Oh, that's a differentiator, downtown core versus right. Everywhere else.
Yeah.
So the motion that's still on the table either should be amended to add edits you may have just made so that those can be approved within the motion, or restate the motion so we can get that approved.
So, I'll restate the motion. So, motion to approve urban forestry plan and structure regulations for minor edit.
Second.
Discussion. All those opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for rocket? Okay, now the next one, you said something about hard cider, right?
An hour.
Right.
Is this going to be an hour?
No, I hope not.
Okay.
We can make it as
hard as definitely not hard cider.
Just helps the automakers how you run things and you can get a little more efficient.
Yeah, you know, that's how it works.
We can send them the recording.
Well, he'll probably be listening to it, I'm sure, in his hotel room, wherever he is. All right, so we're on deliberation. Wait a minute, this is what happened here.
Number seven.
Energy.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yes, so moving on to item number seven, Energy and Sustainability Workshop, second in the series, Green Building Programs and Low Impact Stormwater Management.
Does it really say that on the agenda?
Yes,
it
says
it all.
Oh, my gosh. I did really bad on the agenda.
Are you, like, falling apart?
I am.
Like,
copy and paste. Yeah, it is
copy
and paste.
Well, now it's all in the record on top of the agenda. So
well, this is officially workshop three, yeah. Waste reduction, recycling, and manual purchasing.
Thank you for the clarification.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
But we don't have any members of the public, so I'm going to breeze through some of this because you guys are familiar with the introduction, where we're at. This is the third in the series. We have one more to go on July 12th on greenhouse gas emissions. And then we'll come back again with all of your notes to actually dig into the document at that point.
Okay.
You've seen that one before. So waste reduction, I want to just kind of identify where our waste goes. So we realize we've got a new contract with with Republic Services, and they are a waste hauler. And the way that it works is waste haulers will typically collect the recycling as a part of their profit. I'll negotiate that. And they process the recycling themselves at their own recycling centers and sell that on the market. The compost that you have in your green bins, and I try to tie the recycling, compost, and garbage with the colors of the bins.
Nicely done.
That goes via contract to Cedar Grove Composting, which is one of the largest composters in the nation. And they turn around and sell that in Home Depots and other hardware stores. So it's a market-driven model. Solid waste, then, the waste haulers have a contract to bring their waste to the King County Cedar Hills Regional Landfill. And that's just over Tiger Mountain from us, over in Maple Valley. And it's 920 acres. I was absolutely blown away when I read how large it is. And receives 800,000 tons of solid waste annually, and it's going to be closing within the next few years.
They also produce electricity from the methane gas.
Oh, interesting.
How long can they do that? As long as it's producing, so they don't have to be operational, right?
Yeah.
Has to put out a certain percentage of gas to be able to burn. So it can last for years.
So what's driving the closure?
It's filling up. So it's been in operations actually since the 1960s, and it was slated to close in 2012, but because we've been getting better and better at reducing our garbage, they've been able to extend that to 2018.
Mm.
So landfills overall across the nation, everyone is trying to move away from the model of just dump it at the landfill because it's extremely expensive to do so. It's expensive to operate, expensive to haul. And so recycling and composting are really being emphasized across the country. So they did King County Solid Waste did a study in 2008 about things coming into the landfill and found that 75% of everything being received was either recyclable, compostable, or reusable. So there's still a lot of progress that we can make. And they've established a goal of zero waste by 2030. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to be taking any waste. It means that nothing that's otherwise recyclable, compostable, or reusable is going to wind up in the landfill. So the primary focus of that is on compostables. So just like you've seen with our new contract, everyone now gets a compost bin. That's where the majority of reduction can take place. Because with yard waste and food waste, that's the largest single item or single bulk of material going to the landfill.
So Mike, I saw some notes today on the Yahoo group about that. So is it not very clear on our website or their website about the bins and how to use them and who gets the bins? And
everyone gets all three bins. Everyone will get a garbage
bin. Everyone that's within the city of North Bend?
Correct.
Even apartment complexes?
No, apartment complexes are different. So that will be recycled dumpsters, garbage dumpsters.
So today we can use, so because there was also the question around whether you got the new bin or you used your old bin. And so I don't know if there's a way that we can make it more clear on the City of North Bend website or if we need to.
And then the city will be putting out a lot more information as the date nears for when the changeover will happen.
Okay.
At the block party, they're going to do a booth specifically from Public Services just for answering questions and so forth. So in addition to being the largest bulk in landfills, composting is also, compostables or organic materials is the largest source of methane emissions. And methane emissions are a problem because they are an extremely potent greenhouse gas, much more so than carbon dioxide. And so by going to composting at composting facilities, you're much more easily able to capture and use that methane than at a landfill. So it's also just a tremendous resource savings and energy savings to recycle. I put just a couple quotes up there, or statistics up there, to show some of those savings. They, again, just show how much it saves by going to recycling as opposed to going with just standard dump. Ready to move on?
This is on the website.
Yeah, I will put this on the website. So next frontiers in waste reduction. So right now we're focusing on composting. Some other cities are now going into organic waste in commercial operations. It's very easy to do technically because it's a controlled waste stream. So fast food restaurants know exactly what's going into the waste because they're producing it. It's a little bit more politically difficult because it can cost them more in their day-to-day operations for sorting and managing it. But changes are happening. Burgerville, I don't know if you guys have heard of Burgerville. It's a chain in Oregon and Southern Washington. They're now composting and recycling. They have a goal of composting and recycling 85% of all their waste. And they're getting there. Seattle and Issaquah now require food service businesses to recycle and compost the materials and provide the bins to do so. And they're joining a large number of cities, larger cities throughout the country that are also doing this. Dallas, San Francisco, and then many countries internationally also require that outside the United States.
Residentially, in Seattle, they can fine if they see too much recyclable goods in the general waste.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's,
mm-hmm.
Another frontier is construction and demolition waste. So right now, everyone just seems to use a dumpster for construction waste. It's the paradigm. It's where we were 15, 20 years ago with recycling here. That doesn't mean that that kind of waste isn't recyclable. Only about 20% of construction demolition waste is not recyclable. So there's a lot of improvement that we can make there. King County's established a goal of 85% diversion of construction demolition waste by 2020 in its own projects. They've also set up a number of programs to make it easier for contractors to get the resources and channels to do that on their own. And then Seattle.
You talk about like some of the construction companies that are, you know, doing green belt homes. Is this one of the things?
This is one of the requirements for green certification.
So when you say King County is requiring 85% diversion, is that just green building standards, or is that all their standards are requiring 85%?
That's what they're applying to themselves for their own projects. Mm-hmm. King County buildings, King County.
So if they're spending money to do it, then.
Yeah.
Help me with the word diversion versus conversion.
Diversion means just what you're not putting into the landfill. You're either composting it or recycling it or reusing it.
Okay. I have to say that a few weeks ago we went out to the place over there, the north end, I don't know, Fall City, where they basically crunch up, like they just have a little machine there, crunch up every imaginable kind of wood into.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It was just amazing to me, the stuff that was in that pile. Pretty cool operation there.
So what are we doing in North Bend? We are a little behind the times, just a little bit. Our recycling is 30%, 32% of our total waste compared to 33% countywide, and 16% composting versus 22% countywide. But that's ahead of our new contract, so I think when we see our new contract with people having more accessibility to composting, that'll go up.
Like the composting part of that, if there's the pizza box analogy. Mm-hmm. There, when this was all getting started, go back 10 years plus, the idea of putting pizza box in recycle wasn't good because there was food attached to the box, cheese, whatever.
Yeah.
So people threw away the pizza box. And I guess it's evolved to the point where now, okay, a little bit of food is fine in the recycle bin. But now we're going to shift people again to say, actually, no, the pizza box is going to go in the other compost
bin. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, I'm assuming our company, Republic, is doing what they should in educating people.
You probably put out a flyer of what can go in.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Snoqualmie, we just did the changeover as well. The city of Snoqualmie went to waste management, which is who North Bend used to have. We kind of flipped. But when they provided us...
Politics?
Yeah. When they provided us with the new garbage bins and so forth, the whole lid has this huge sticker on it that says what you put in it and what you don't put in it.
I love
which
that.
Is really nice and simple.
Love that.
So I imagine that they'll probably do the same thing in North Bend.
My husband says, that doesn't belong there. I said, it's right there, see?
So we're adding a lot of service to the recycling as well, in addition to the compost. So electronic waste and small appliances, your coffee maker breaks, you can put it with the recycling. You call ahead for that one.
I did not know that was out of
the food oils, fats, and motor oils can be curbside recycled now. And then we also have 15 special yard waste events per year. So that's when you've got it.
Those are still going to happen?
Yes. So when you're doing a big yard project and you've got tons of branches to deal with, you can bring those in. We do those on Saturdays, usually twice a month.
You have to be a resident of the city for that?
Right. And that's at Public Works. And then we're also participating in the King County Recycle More campaign. And so King County is providing some grant funds to doing some of the outreach for the conversion and for promoting recycling. Again, they're going to be at the block party. They're putting on some TV and radio ads. We have some... a little video on the City of North Bend website about recycling.
So Mike, just to sit back to Gary's question, I mean, so because we were in the situation where we got annexed is, you know, you have this special yard waste event that happened, we couldn't participate, and it's like, what if we did allow outreach? to the
$15.
I mean, if you
or like maybe like a zip code.
Well, if we did a joint
zip code.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
it encourages what we're trying to encourage. So.
What if we did a joint?
What's that?
A joint project with the county and the city or outlying areas within.
Because there's enough still unincorporated areas.
If I'm not mistaken, too, King County, this is our Cedar Falls. They may do that, but it's not as regular.
Oh, they do
they
that.
Do receive yard waste,
they
but not
did,
on a regular basis.
They did a free branch drop-off when we had all
oh, we had
the
store.
Yeah. So what happens to that, by the way? When we do it at Public Works, that
we grind it up. We create hog fuel out of Public Works, so, and then we spread that hog fuel around for different projects. A lot of it's gone out to Meadow Brook Farm for trails and things out there.
Hog fuel stands for?
Hog fuel is just a name for small chipped up wood. And it's the name because it truly was hog fuel. It went not hog animal, but hog as in small industrial burners. So for things like wood mills and so forth, they would operate the mill with all these ground up wood.
Bush hog.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Okay, I mentioned the special recycling events. Oh, also we have our annual event in April, and that's for more difficult things to recycle. And you see those happening everywhere now, and the reason for doing it, it costs money to do it, but the reason for doing it is it costs less to do that than it costs to go and clean up stuff that have been dumped by the river and
so the batteries, I thought, just go in regular trash. They didn't be recycled.
Those should be recycled.
Those should be recycled.
You bring an interesting point. The no dump concept, where you find materials dumped, a lot of times it's on private property, frankly, because there's a driveway that's got to go over, and somebody's driving around with their washing machine or their couch going, where should I get rid of this?
Yeah. Or it's the property owner.
Yeah.
Don't be even there.
Or maybe.
I
guess what I'm saying is, amongst with this education, I mean, there's ordinances I believe we have, no dumping ordinances. It always irks me when I'm out hiking, and some you whatever got there somehow in whatever vehicle they managed to get to that point to dump whatever they dumped.
It's like, how did that get there?
And it's impossible to go drive a city truck or whatever else is going to do to retrieve that. It's almost like if we had some funds allocated to do some sleuthing, because sometimes you can track down where the stuff came from.
Would be really satisfying.
It fits this equation, because that sleuthing might not be, hey, look, maybe the person says they didn't know it was illegal. Okay, great. Well, now you've been trained, right? But people would stop doing it, particularly because if they knew there was a place they could take it free at the same time, counterbalance. I'm just throwing that out as the mix. And you concur, obviously.
It would be nice. I don't know about the funding aspect of it.
Yeah. Is the special event, is that all free, though?
Yes. It is. There's some things that they charge a small amount for, tires, like $5 or something.
Yes. Yeah. But.
So, and that's just once a year?
Yeah.
Do you think that there's enough that you could do it more than once a year?
We do that through grant funding. We get grant funding from the state to do that, so probably not.
Just because there's like so many more electronics and batteries now than there were, I mean, I even say 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That
the county has a wonderful.
I have cell phones myself.
The county has a wonderful program or a wonderful website under their solid waste division that says, where do I deal with this? And you open up a list and you say calculators or whatever it is, and they'll say take it here or here or here.
But sometimes the cost to get in my car with two cell phones to drive to Bellevue is like, okay, so I just totally.
But now we have the small value appliance and electronic pickup with our curbside if you call ahead.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Gotta get that experience.
So other municipal operations, we do what we can just within the office. We have standard commingled recycling, and then secure shredded recycling. What we don't offer is recycling in city parks, so I think that's our growth opportunity. I know our public works crew has expressed concerns before about it takes time to, it takes more time to go collect recycling and garbage than just to get the garbage. And then also they're worried that people dump trash in the recycle bins, which then creates, you know, you lose the opportunity to recycle because you're not going to spend time sorting it. I think that comes back to
volunteer opportunity for school kids.
Yeah. Or I think it comes back to making sure that you have the correct design recycling facilities so people.
Airports are a great example of how that works. I have been to an airport lately that didn't have three different bins. Newspaper, recycle, or plastic and glass or something, or plastic and then garbage.
And I think always having them together, because if there's just a recycle bin or just a garbage can,
everything goes in.
So there's our waste reduction policies that we have in the element. Let's see if you have any suggestions on those.
I would take their suggestion papers, and that's to partner with the county for incorporating surrounding residents.
Yeah.
Whenever possible, if there's other sources of funding.
I'm sure King County has the same types of events. It's just like a
There was one that was done, and I think it was in Redmond. But again, it's like you have to have justification to drive all the way to Redmond with your bag of batteries.
Co-sponsoring. Okay. A few more.
So when the landfill closes in Fall City, where's the next location?
There is not. At that point, the county plans to either build a incinerator or begin exporting to distant lands, which is, either option is costly.
Over the mountain or out in the water?
Yeah.
So we're currently doing the study. The county is in.
Okay.
Transfer station or something.
They have a master plan, solid waste master plan that they're dealing with how to address it. Their initial goal is just to extend the length of the life of the landfill as long as possible. They think they're going to be done in 2018.
So this is the last of the.
I got one more second.
Okay. Well, I'll throw this in because it might fit something else. You just said King County's great. We're shutting down the landfills. It's true across the land, right? Environmentally, they're trying not to add stuff to the landfill. Has anybody else read different articles over time, particularly in Europe, and I want to say Germany, that their way to treat the same thing that would normally go to a landfill is treated through a conveyor reduction, they use methane gas that comes out of it, they can conduct enough electricity to melt the aluminum, then it gets packaged.
Incinerators.
Whole thing. Well, incinerator's a part of it. But at the end of the day, you end up having packaged, recycled, recyclable product, which is saleable in bulk. You have methane drives the furnace, and the off gas at the end of the day is not smoke, it's hydrogen. Oxygen water breakdown. That's hit anybody's radar?
I know that they are really, really, really good at managing all that, but I don't know how they do it. It's probably something worthwhile to.
Because if that's been talked about in King County, would it be cool, I think, to have us as the opportunity town to check it out?
Yeah.
I mean, that pays for itself according to what I've read. And that nothing gets trucked anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's all generally in the proximity where it's created. So, just throw it out there and maybe we'll come back to it.
So,
environmentally preferable purchasing.
So this is an official term that was established back by the EPA under an executive order in 1993. And the idea is that you're purchasing things that have less harm to people, less harm to the environment, over things that are more harmful. So you're looking at energy efficiency, you're looking at fuel efficiency, low toxicity materials. Anytime there's a way to do something that has less toxic impacts than an alternative. Recycled content and recyclability, and then often locally sourced content as well. So the state has a number of requirements. The feds have a number of requirements in addition that they apply to federal agencies. I'm just focusing principally on the state and local level. So this started back in 1965 in Washington State. So the state created a code that required state agencies to consider recycling. It was pretty basic back then, but it was a start. It was dramatically expanded in 1991. Basically, that each state agency and local agencies or local jurisdictions that spent over $500,000 annually in supplies would have to come up with environmental purchasing policies and an environmental purchasing steward to kind of guide the process. We don't fall in that category. We don't have nearly that much purchasing, but this is your Bellevue's, your Seattle's. In 2011, an additional requirement that all state agencies had to purchase 100% recycled paper for all their use. And then,
do the city do that today?
No, we do not. And then finally in 2004, an executive order about reducing toxic, persistent bicumulative chemicals. Other ways of getting towards environmental purchasing is all the certification programs out there. Those are just a couple of them. And these aren't, we're not talking about food, organic certification kind of things, but these are more products that are used frequently by governments and businesses. There's a lot of greenwashing programs out there as well, so you always have to be careful and look at who is doing the certification. If it's a trade group, it's probably greenwashing. If it's some kind of third-party nonprofit organization or a government agency, it's probably a pretty genuine program that's got some standards behind it. So, pretty blank slide there, except for our 12-mile-per-gallon excursion, or no, it's an expedition there, just to show that we don't have any policies in place to direct our decision-making.
Just needs to run out of oil.
Convert it to propane.
Yeah. So there's our proposed policies. And I would imagine under the environmental purchasing strategy that we would keep it fairly basic. So recycled paper, not using water bottles at council meetings, fairly simple to implement things. Mm-hmm. Not a complicated list, a checklist to look at every cleaning product you can use and so forth.
So we have to get a dishwasher so you can each use it.
So Bobby did that?
In the future city hall.
Yeah. More paper cups.
It's a dream.
Yeah, where are we going to go with the firehouse? Yeah, take it out?
I know. I was thinking that today.
That proposal
when I was
is downtown here.
To a new building.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I move on to the next page. It's really scary how much paper we go through.
Oh, it's outrageous. Yeah.
I mean, you guys think planning commission packets are bad. Council packets are typically twice the size. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that was everything. No, there's more.
not just a matter of fact.
Yeah.
In that context, I always see green roofs as a little bit strange. It's, you know, it's this dramatic thing that's... But the true function of it is just a little bit of stormwater attenuation that it costs so much to do, and you have to restructure the building. Mm-hmm.
There's something that strikes me on 5.4 about used vehicles, mm-hmm. used whatever. There's a part of me that thinks that government entities need to be the ones buying the new stuff, because that trickles down to the next user is going to buy it used. Mm-hmm. But the functionality of it is at 100% for the government.
But we also have an on-site mechanic for maintaining things.
Well, so I guess I'm pointing out, using the car example, if it breaks down, there's a government function that's not happening. That's not the same as somebody having a used vehicle or a used copy machine. I'm just throwing that out. I get what you're saying, is trying to save resources. Mm-hmm. But my instinct is, when it's time to buy something, buy a new one and make sure that the cop's not driving a used 1987.
Yeah, there's certainly priorities for public safety. But
well, it's
I think
the balance of, I mean, I think we had this conversation we were talking about as the vehicles came up. In a prior conversation about fuel, I think it was, mm-hmm. and so it was like balancing the higher cost of that vehicle versus we have this old one that, yeah, doesn't get as good of mileage, but it costs us nothing now. Yeah. It's like trying to find that mm-hmm. happy place between. Yeah.
I could see the value of maintaining until it has an issue, but the concept of going shopping for something and using the used.
Well, we have an example.
Only
of that.
Leaning towards used.
Or even the way that's written.
Yeah, that does.
Yeah, that does.
Support that, Jim. I think, yeah, when it comes time to purchase, knowing the advances between 2011 and 2015 in vehicles that are coming, the fuel efficiency standards that are out there, I would think we would want to move to a newer vehicle than used.
There might be a good.
I mean, you can make a car last forever. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be the car driver came with a mechanic. Right, to make it across the country. So I'm not I'm not. It's not wasted on me. My cars last forever because I take care of them. But when it comes time for the city, if it's a task worth having the city do, that vehicle, if we're using that example, needs to be reliable first and efficient.
Depends on the vehicle. Public service vehicle. There's not very many used ones out there that they have brand to the balance.
Yeah.
Really
shop
around.
That'll be hard
anywhere
fuel efficient.
Yeah.
When
you
can also
buy a
year or 2 years old parts truck, you know.
And I think actually
pick up trash, that's a different story.
Not mission critical.
I think one of our dump trucks in the last couple of years we bought used because it was so much more expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big cost difference though.
Shave a lot of that new cost just by buying like a year old.
Well,
it's a
philosophical thing.
Consider
the purchase of used rather than new vehicles.
Yeah.
That always means consider it versus
right.
Support makes it sound like that's where we're going.
I look at it this way, and I don't want to get this long discussion, I'm sorry. It's almost like the city or any government municipality, whoever, decides to shop the way a consumer would and should shop. They all of a sudden, now they're driving a vehicle that was made in Korea because that's the smart thing to do. It's the same trend that says buy used because it's cheaper. It's less, but at the same, who's going to start buying the products that we all use? There needs to be, it's kind of like, you know, we're going to buy a used helicopter for the president to cruise around in, or we're going to start off from scratch and spend a ridiculous amount of money because I've just...
So
you
buy all the vehicles
down here at the Chevy dealership.
Yeah, maybe. Support the locals. All right, so is there consensus to change that to consider the purchase, or are you saying something stronger?
You can certainly evaluate it. I consider, however you want to say that. I'm not going to say don't think about it, but my lean is where municipalities should be on the front line of replacing their vehicles with new vehicles.
I hesitate with the word otherwise, and I would almost want also meet energy and resources.
Oh, that also,
conservation.
Yes. Consider the purchase of use rather than new permit.
Yeah, also
that needs. Also meet, so that you are comparing apples to apples instead of.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that gets it.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
All right. That was all.
Yes.
Well, I didn't have time to review it.
That's okay. I think you're going to get a better chance.
Yeah.
When's our next meeting?
28.
2 weeks. Thank you. Does anyone know now they won't be here? Okay.
I'm going to take one off.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order?
I have one thing to add. Oh, I'm sorry, and I'm the one who wanted to be out of here by 9:30. With all the, it was probably the wrong word to use, but I'm going to use it. With all the hoopla over the last 2 to 3 weeks about signs, little Mount Sinai signs, situation. Is it something that we need to revisit as a group? Is that under our purview?
Yes, it is. We do eventually want to revisit the sign code. It's going to be very controversial and will probably take some time.
I feel like it needs to be taken care of sooner rather than later. I felt like I personally took it as a jab at myself, even though I had nothing to do with it. I was like, oh crap. I represent people as part of this, my role in the commission, and I felt like, wow, we just really need to do something.
So I've been out of town. Help me understand the issue.
I don't know exactly all the technicalities of it, but basically Mount Sinai Nursery, their little signs.
We support, etc.
Well, no, they have their advertising signs out here on North Bend Way to say, come down here, come to our place.
Gotcha.
It's illegal for them to have those because it's not on their own property.
No, not necessarily. It can be on private property, somebody else's private property, but it can't be on the right of way.
Can't be on the right of way.
Can't be on the sidewalk.
So what about other North Bend businesses that do it every day?
There is an allowance right downtown because there's a lot of sidewalk.
So it just seems like, you know, I totally saw both sides, but I feel like you said, it's probably going to be very controversial, but I personally feel like it needs to be something that needs to be addressed sooner rather than waiting until, just because it created a lot of stir, articles in the newspaper about it, and I just was like, whoa, I'm so glad.
Are you going out there about it and picking up the sign?
No.
It sounds like it's like an ongoing relationship.
Oh,
he goes and picks it up, and he goes and gets the sign.
Well, they have it in your office, right?
They do,
yeah.
I don't know if Public Works, but I think they collect them. Through our office.
So they can come pick them up there or go see Ron.
Does anyone
probably be grateful to listen to
them?
Yeah.
Probably.
The business is big.
Yeah. Anyone recall or heard Blazing Bagels in Redmond?
Oh, yes.
I can see a great analogy between Blazing Bagels and anyone who wants to bring in people from the main drag. That was major litigation, lots of time, and I'm not sure the city of Redmond ended up with a decent sign code after everything was done. So, to your point,
there is no easy solution.
It's important to pay attention to it, but you know, I think it comes in like a pendulum swing. People do it like crazy and then it kind of fades away. One piece that I would throw out that seemed to fix the problem was the ordinance doesn't talk about where you can put signs so much or how large the sign can be necessarily. It talks about if you have a sign out for more than this period of time and we pick it up, number one, you may not see it again, and number two, if you do it again, we're going to send you a bill. That kind of concept. Because you can't, it's so hard to supervise when somebody puts a sign out. Is it right in the right of way? Do I take a picture and go record that? It's far better to compartmentalize something very simple and have some pretty stiff penalties for abusers and let it roll that way. But yeah, trying to get down to the minutiae, everybody's going to have a different opinion.
No, I know.
I know, but yeah. I mean, there was a comment that this is something that has not been looked at for a number of years.
Yeah.
And so, if we are trying to do what we're trying to do, and you know, people come here to go to Mount Si and they see the nursery, it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's go to the nursery. I didn't even know there was a nursery.
Sure.
Or like the Dahlia thing that's down Mount Si Boulevard. I mean, it's the same thing. I never knew they were down there. I probably would have never known that they were down there.
The other thing that we have to be really careful.
Christmas tree farms, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, Christmas tree farms.
We have to be really careful to be content neutral, though. We can't distinguish one business versus another. Right. So if you want to accept signs that advertise with the nursery, you're going to have to also accept your free rock chip repair and your 50% off the lube and the everything else.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's,
I don't know the difference between a stationary sign and the sign that moves around in a circle by backhoe, because if you're stationary on that same sidewalk for 8 hours,
That's how that started.
That jumps all the way to the federal constitution of freedom of speech.
Yeah.
That's a person.
That whole thing you just described, the guy standing on dancing on the whole thing, that is rooted in municipal sign codes. Because a fixed sign is a thing you can talk about.
Yeah.
Somebody hold the sign.
Interesting. I know I'm opening a huge can of worms, but I felt like...
That's all right.
Because they're handed out for free. You can go out there and grab one of the yard signs, and I'm like, now I drive down the road and I see 55 yard signs. I love that people are supportive of them, but is that what we want?
Is our sign code set up already that issues take care of, or no? Do we have a stringent sign code yet, or no?
We don't allow signs within the right of way, so that's the issue of the violation.
And if they're there, what happens?
They get confiscated.
And that's the end of it? Can they come back and get them?
Mm-hmm. They get them that day.
They can get them, but after it's been collected a couple times, we don't let them have it back.
Okay.
But it sounds like that hasn't been done. Like that they've continuously been able to get their signs.
Just run this out for a second.
I'm not the one collecting the signs.
Yeah.
I was going to say, run that out for a second. You're the one putting the signs out in the morning, and you're just, I'll just go pick them up from the city later.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They're safe.
That's
exactly.
Really safe.
It doesn't cost anything.
I'll have to pay the guy to go pick them up.
The city picks them up. You don't get them back. That'd be the story.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So.
Well, deja vu. Thank everybody for allowing me to ask the questions and for being patient.
Absolutely. Appreciate your critique.
I think, what I should have said on the transportation plan was just, I think after a year's worth of work, it showed that we paid some attention to it and the dedication that we hope that for the next few years it's a substantial update that will be worthwhile of all time.
Well, it is good stuff and keeps us focused and doesn't let us lose sight of the things that we
Yep.
A big thank you guys too, because we brought some heavy stuff through this last year. Really dug in and
you may have
not
like
complained
all the time.
Sounds like it was a push job before me got here.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. If there's nothing else for the good of the order, a motion to adjourn received.
Second.
Any objections? We are adjourned. The time is 9:29.
Mike, thank you. Could you organize a community motorcycle ride led by the Planning Commission through some of the city's most attractive and new development areas?
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. Count me in.
I'll do it.
Let's do it after one of our next Planning Commission meetings.
No, daytime. Saturday rides? Yes. So,
It's still daylight out there.
No, that's an incentive to get the Planning Commission meeting over early.
There you go.
Before dark.
I don't know if I'll be able to attend, though. That's why I said.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
Dare I say there's no recycle bin?
You're going to be changing that for pretty soon.
I am right now. I got 2-year-old.
An extra set pair.
Yes. But now I'll be in the smaller diapers.
Thanks for the juice, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
I'll recycle that together.
There's a survivor there.
Okay.
So when we bought our house, we backed up to the Lance property.
On the east side?
On the river side, yeah. On the river side. So when we went in there, we were like, oh,
there's some guy back here who has 9 acres. There's probably maybe 25 houses back there. And it's like, so we bought our house knowing that, just like we bought our house, we were seeing the truck stop. But people in the neighborhood are either going to lose their mind.
What's going on with that, by the way?
John Day's going to develop it.
Riverfront houses.
They're not riverfront. So Lynn's keeping his property, and actually, he only has a portion of it that is really riverfront. So his, where is it? So this is his property right here.
Yep.
So he's going to keep this part. This will be 28-ish homes.
25. What size of the lots?
Little.
7,500 square feet.
Not as small.
They're probably similar to the 200. And then there's like 15 or 12 there.
75?
7,500 square
feet. That's pretty standard these days.
That's probably, that's Wood River.
That's, right? Well.
No, it's not.
Well,
it's
ours are almost
3 quarters, aren't they?
Ours are almost an acre.
Cedar.
Tanner Woods probably.
Well, they're about 6,500.
Yeah, tiny.
What's Tanner Woods? Probably similar.
Yeah, Tanner Woods is the same thing.
Yeah. It's just going to be, it's going to be like Tanner Wood. So, you know, you can look at it from two perspectives. It's like, oh, we're going to get nice new homes behind us. We can compare them. They're on 7,500 foot lots. Ours are on an acre.
Right.
So there's...
It'll push your value.
So might. What's that?
It'll probably push your value.
It might. You know, they're low right now, so...
It'll add a little bit because of circulation between the two.
My question, Mike, was because I know down here, you would block off the ability for that road to come through because you had talked about that the road would.
They're all going to have to connect to one another.
They're going to have to connect.
Yeah, at least the
half. This will be interesting because this is just skinny. It's just a driveway.
They're going to improve that. It'll be narrow, though.
It'll be narrow. So I did ask you about
access
to every property. What's that?
Gated access, maybe?
No.
No.
Kids aren't allowed for public streets.
Yeah.
That he lets us do that. I stopped and asked him about it. I was like,
Is
there a possibility to get to the back of our lot? Mm-hmm. And a garage.
We'll put a driveway down or
alleyway.
Well, there'll be a street. The street will be on this side, and the houses will be on that side across. So there'll be a street. And
yeah, to your backyard, I have a street.
Yeah.
So at least you got that buffer.
You can barely even now, like, these two homes are pretty wooded. Ours is only a little bit cleared out because we put a shed back there, but even still,
you can right there too?
What's that?
The large chunk to the right, but it has a lot of river frontage?
This?
Isn't that Day?
No.
No, that's the old...
It's Mark and what's her name? Harris.
Who is it? You know.
I can't remember her name.
Apparently some giant name.
I'm curious how this is going to turn out. Because that's
it's really
skinny.
Skinny. Yeah, it is.
Really skinny.
They're allowed to do a half street frontage improvement along there. So it's just
Be
a 20-foot right of way,
mm-hmm.
No parking. Until this other side develops.
Interesting.
So it shrinks down the road a little bit.
Yeah.
And how about the Hearthstone project?
Hearthstone?
Hearthstone.
Where's that at?
They're still working on their engineering, apparently. That's the one that's across the freeway over here. They still anticipate coming in sometime in the next couple months. But they're going their class.
They're Class Act.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they are.
Nice.
Yeah.
They own the property next to the old antique store too, right? Don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Hmm.
Stone Cottage.
Yep. Yeah.
Is there something happening with that? Because there's a sign, mm-hmm. Outside Cottage, or
no?
Or is it just a sign? It's just a sign.
It's just their way of promoting their little existing homes that are on that property.
Interesting.
Well, is it the same owners that? That was the wedding.
Yeah, the wedding.
Yeah. Did they buy that place or no?
No.
So it's still the same owners.
Because they're trying to get lease out of that. What was that? It was lease signs.
Yeah, there's lease signs up there now.
Yeah.
So. Fun stuff.
Where's Martell's? They are.
Oh, yeah. Where is that?
where is it?
It's like Frankie's Pizza, but I can't imagine where.
It's going to be those homes right there.
Those homes are, that's what I thought. Yeah. Those are all zoned commercial currently, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's trying to actually move the homes on fire.
Oh, was there like the old...
Yeah,
they're
really
nice
cute homes.
Cute homes, yeah.
And actually the owner of the property grew up in one of those homes, so he is really concerned to actually see something happen with it.
What's his last name? He's an ophthalmologist.
So what kind of design standard did you guys give him?
Obstead or something.
I don't care.
That's the Obstead's the dentist. The dentist guy. Oh.
He's a retired vision doc.
Yeah. I'm just drawing a blank on his name right now.
Yeah.
So I've always said that North Bend needs a drugstore.
Yeah. So you guys get a little
out of
purple.
Yeah, you can see if the industry wants to see what it looks like.
Oh,
they brought in their plans.
Oh, they
their
did?
Conceptual plans for it.
Oh, cool. Does it look nice?
Yeah, they used a lot of cedar shingle and stone. It looks a lot nicer than the other
cartels. Very nice.
Yeah, so
that's got to be unique.
I guess
we stand at
3 a.m.
Yeah.
Kirkland.
I was getting D. Williams.
And
I said, hey, if I
had
a
hairpin,
I'd have stores.
So, yeah, I'm already here.
Yeah, they're going to be big enough to sell booze.
I'm working from
home tomorrow.
I wonder if cartels is. Oh, yeah, and then you're.
What's that to be? But see,
10,000
square feet.
Yeah, they're over 10,000.
But then does it conflict because QFC and Safeway are selling? Or does it matter?
No, I mean, it's just how big a unit the building is.
And it's square footage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll bet you $10 that's part of their business model because they don't do freestanding buildings.
They do.
Bartels.
That's what all their new buildings have been.
The new ones.
What's the one at Issaquah? It's freestanding, isn't it? That new one?
Yeah. Over 500 people.
Yeah.
And that was actually a part. The Mountain Valley Center tried to get them. They said, we've got this great space.
Yeah.
But they said, Walgreens didn't want to be on our own.
Walgreens, that's their own.
Is the strip mall?
Freestanding.
Oh, freestanding.
Yeah. Brick building.
Oh, because they have that other one as well, yeah.
Cool.
Exciting
stuff.
It's going
to be interesting to look at that now, though. Come to town.
It's going to
be really.
It's the way you start before you come into the nice historic. This is where you start. So I bet you did a good job.
Yeah.
It looks nice.
I'll try to get rid of those houses.
That's a great smash and grab spot, isn't it? Yeah, they're nice houses. Which ones? They're not exactly, you can speak. They're cute houses.
Yeah. Well, we actually have so many lots downtown that would be perfect for.
There's one right here.
Private entrance at the back of the house. And the hotel's going. Aren't there like a group of older homes back in here somewhere? Yeah, so you can ride across the street, like a nice historic touristy kind of area. What did you say? Was you going there? That's empty lot right there.
Oh, that's right, there's the other empty lot there too, kind of big. That's where I originally thought it was going. I was like, oh.
And the hotel says?
Hotel is, they're working on the SEPA, and they were supposed to bring in the SEPA this week, but they didn't, so next week. So it's moving along.
Yeah.
I think it'd be nice to see, even though I'd rather have
nothing. Gotta have change.
I know.
Gotta have turnover.
I know.
Gotta have
turnover. It'd be nice to see it, like,
it'd be helpful.
Be like, oh,
yeah.
So that kind of
keep them outside the hotel.
Makes you feel invigorated that good stuff.
Cool.
All good.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
All right. Yeah, you guys have a nice evening.
Thank you.
Good
you
job.
End with this wrapped up deal or what?
Oh, I can deep it all.
Awesome.
All right.
Yeah, only two.